Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on Pehei Amud Aleph. Hariat Muter de Choladam. You are released to everybody. Ella, La Abba Ule Avich. Exception of my father and your father. Lachi Ule Achich. My brother and your brother. La Eved Ule Oved Kochavim. Or with the exception of a slave or a non-Jew. Ule Chol Mish Ein Ala Alav Kiddushin. Or anybody else where she has no manifestation of kiddushin, kasher. In that case, the get is a kasher get. There is no shi'ur. There is no leftover in the get. Because irrespective of whether she's being divorced from this individual or not, she can't marry these people. And so then leaving them out of the get is not really a shi'ur because she can't engage with these individuals whether or not they're mentioned in the get. On the other hand, Hariat Muter de Chol Adam, Ella, with the exception of Almana de Kohen Gadol, a widow to a Kohen Gadol, Grusha v'chalutza de Kohen Hedyot, or a divorcee, or someone who had Chalitza performed to a Kohen Hedyot, Mamzeret v'netina de Yisrael, Mamzeret, or a netina from the Givonim to Yisrael, or Bat Yisrael Mamzer l'natin, or the other way around, depending if the psul is from the male side or the female side. V'chol mish yesh alav kiddushin. All of these are restricted marriages. They're not allowed to engage in these marriages, but if you do engage in these marriages, the kiddushin are tofsim. Because they're only isirei lavin, the kiddushin are tofsim in these instances. Afilu be'avera pasul. So if there's something that the kiddushin are tofes, even though it's improper, there's an avera here, then the get is pasul. That is considered to be a shiur in the get, a leftover residual in the get, because he is precluding her from marrying these individuals, who she is otherwise precluded from marrying, but that preclusion is only an iser lav, which doesn't prevent her from getting kiddushin or having kiddushin with these individuals. It simply says that it's a improper marriage. And the difference between them being whether kiddushin or tofsin or not, when kiddushin are not tofsin, then it's not considered to be a leftover of the release of the get. When kiddushin are tofsin, then it is considered to be a shiur in the get. Your point is well taken, which is that in the Mishnah, the examples that are brought there, you cannot take them at face value. Those are all examples of isurei lavin that are general problems, not necessarily in a case like this, because you're right. In a case where they're divorced, and that's what's happening over here, Almana the Kohen Gadol is not relevant. She's precluded from marrying the Kohen Gadol because she is a grusha. The same is true by a chalutza. Chalutza is only a din derabon, and it's not a din d'oraita. But what the point of the Mishnah is if he leaves out a marriage or ability to marry someone, even though that individual is precluded from marrying her because there's an iser min haTorah to marry that individual, nevertheless, it's considered to be a shiur because those isurim are what we call lighter isurim. They're only isurei lavin, and therefore kedushin are tofsin. So the better example is a grusha le kohen hedyot. She is a divorcee to kohen hedyot. She can't marry a kohen anyway. So now if he says to her, you're divorced with the exception of kohanim, meaning that you're not allowed to marry kohanim, is that considered to be a leftover? She can't marry kohanim anyway because the Torah says she can't marry kohanim. Nevertheless, that is considered to be a shiur, because if she marries a kohen, the kedushin will be tofes, even though technically she's not supposed to be doing that. The Mishnah, as many of the Rishonim point out, is just using what's called Shigrat HaLashon. This is the standard language that they use in instances where you want to list a bunch of illicit marriages that are only Isurei Lavin, that are only on the level of problematic min haTorah of an Isur Lav and not an Isur Karet. So it's not giving examples specifically for our case, but it just gives you the normal list. And you have to look at the list and say, okay, some of these are relevant here, some of these are not relevant over here. Klola Dereisha, that klal, when we ended the ration, says, this is the principle. Now here it never says the word klola, but rather it says, the chol mi she'en alav kiddushin. So that's the klal, or the general principle. Anybody she'en la alav kiddushin, that she has no kiddushin with, latuye, that comes to include, shar chayve kretot, that comes to include any erva, or any relationship that involves karet, because there the kiddushin are not tofsin. Klalo de seifa, the general principle of the seifa, again, the word klal doesn't appear, but it says, ulechol mishesh la alav kiddushin, letuye shar chayve lavin. It comes to include any other chayve lavin, any other improper marriage, but is only improper because there's an isur lav involved with it. And here, there's a question about the gears in the Gemara here, whether it's Gigon, Amoni, Moavi, Nitini, Mitzriva, Edomi. All of those are examples, although it's not so straightforward because some of them are not Yisrei Lav, but some of them are Yisrei Asay rather than Yisrei Lav. And so therefore, they eliminate it from the Girsa. But anything else that's a Chayve Lavin, those would be a Shiur in the Get. Bamine Rova Mirav Nachman. Chutz mi Kedushei Katan Mahu. If the Get says that she can get married, meaning Hariat Muter L'chol Adam, Chutz mi Kedushei Katan, with the exception of the kiddushin of a minor. Rashi says, Chutz mi ploni v'katanu, specifies this individual, and says you may not get married to this individual, but that individual is a minor now, and we know that minors don't have the ability to generate kiddushin. Mahu, what's the din here? Mi amrinan hashta mi alav bar havayahu, do we say currently this child is unable to produce kiddushin, and therefore it's not a leftover, a shiur in the get, because she couldn't have married this individual anyway. Odoma atzei lechlal havaya. Or do we say that in the future, he will reach a point where he can engage in kiddushin, and therefore it is a shiur in the get, because she hasn't been freed entirely. There's something left out of her ability to marry individuals. Samalei tinitua. We have it in a Tanaic work. That a ktana mitgareshe b'kiddushei avia. A ktana can get divorced from kiddushin that were accepted by her father. When it comes to a ktana, ktana cannot accept kiddushin because she is a minor. On the other hand, her father is empowered to accept kiddushin on her behalf. And if he does accept kiddushin on her behalf, she's married midoraita, mina Torah. That is a full-fledged marriage when the father accepts kiddushin on her behalf. Now, after he accepts kiddushin on her behalf, he loses control or auspices over this minor daughter that he has. The truth is that if it's only at kiddushin, then the father still has some connection to the daughter. It's only after nisuin, after the consummation of the marriage, then the daughter is totally severed the relationship with the father. And therefore, if she gets divorced after that point in time, there's no way for her to remarry midoraita, because she herself is a ktana, a minor, and her father no longer has the relationship by which he can marry her off again. He's allowed to marry her off once, not to marry her off twice. So for that reason, what the Gemara is asking over here is, if she is divorced after her father married her off, then the divorce works. Rashi over here makes a small comment, but is Rashi the Shitoto. It says, Im kibla gita lachar mitat avia, that she accepted the get after the passing of her father. Rashi is focusing on the fact that the ktana herself accepted the get, and not the father. That's because Rashi believes if the father is alive, then the daughter cannot accept the get while the father is alive. On the other hand, if you remember back on Samach Dalet Amud Bet, there Tosafot made the point that Shema Mina, Da'afim Yesh La'av, even if she has a father, Imgia Get Liada Migureshet, that she has a yad to accept a get, even when her father is still alive. So Tosafot brought over there the Girsa of Rashi and Kiddushin, which seems to indicate that he changed his mind about the issue. But Rashi over here seems to indicate that she can only get divorced if her father is not alive, then she can accept the get. If her father's alive, he has to accept the get on her behalf. And therefore, the bride here says that the ktana mitgareshet, that she is divorced by accepting her get, that means that the father must not be alive, according to Rashi. Again, for the Balei Tosafot, the two are not mutually exclusive, and therefore the father could be alive over here. But again, the father being alive is not relevant to the ability to remarry, because the father's already lost auspices over the daughter, because he can't marry her off again. And so this daughter will not be able to get married again, midoraita. And that, the problem is, amai, why is she able to be divorced in this instance? Vabinan v'yatza v'hayta. Don't we have a requirement of v'yatza? She will leave this husband, v'hayta li shacher, and then she will be able to marry someone else. So if that's the case, gerushin, or the ability to divorce, seems premised on the woman's ability then to get married afterwards. But if she lacks the ability to get married, maybe the divorce should not go through. So, Ella, atio lechlal chavaya. What you must say is, even though she cannot get married now to someone else, in the future, when she comes of age, she will be able to marry someone else. Hachanami. So too in the case of the katan. If he leaves the katan out of the get, that's also a problem. Atio lechlal chavaya. Because then he eventually will reach the point where he can't get married. The proof from here is that just like by the katana, it's sufficient that in the future she can get married, and therefore she's called a bat havaya. She's called someone who can get married. So too by the katan. Even though now he cannot get married, since in the future he can get married, that's enough to be considered someone who she could have married. And if that's the case, when he leaves that individual out of the get and says, Erat muter d'chodam, chutz mikatan ploni, with the exception of that such and such individual, that's problematic because he will reach the age where he can get married, and that is considered to be a shiur in the get. Chutz min anoladim, mahu. With the exception of those that will be born, what is the din? Hashta mi'aloi jalu. Right now, they haven't been born, so it's not an exception or a shiur in the get. Odilma atide dimityalde. Or maybe, in the future, they will be born, and therefore it will be a shiur in the get. There are questions amongst the Rishonim as to whether this reference is ubarin. These are fetuses that exist now, because he's directing it at something that is ba'olam, that's in the world, but something that is just not relevant to the world of Kiddushin and Nisuin right now, which is a fetus, which will be born, and we know will be born, inevitably, but they have yet to be born. So they're obviously not shayach to Kiddushin and Nisuin right now, but in the future they will. The others that suggest that it's not talking about ubarim, but rather some future birth that takes place in a more generic sense. Because if you specify one or two ubarin, then that's not much different than the case of katan. So here it seems to be a much more generic statement where those that will be born in the future, meaning that anybody who is not present now, but is born after this point in time, they will be precluded. So amale itinitua. It's our Mishnah. Le'eved ul'oved kochavim. Our Mishnah says that if you leave out of the get an Eved and an Oved Kochavim, that's not considered to be a shiur. Femita, if you are right that something in the future could be problematic, then Eved v'Oved Kochavim nami, avide demigayre. Because the Eved and Oved Kochavim could convert and then be relevant in the picture of Kiddushin and Nisuin. So the fact that he leaves them out in the get, that's not considered to be shiur, even though there's a possibility they will convert. And when they convert, they will be relevant to the world of Kiddushin and Nisuin. It says, Hanach, lav the gure kaime. Hani, li'it yalude kaime. There's a big difference between an Eved and Oved Kochavim, who are not inevitably going to convert. They might convert, but that is not the natural outcome of their status today. Whereas any child that is not born will be born in the future. I mean, it's an inevitable outcome of, again, if you're speaking about fetuses, it's much easier to understand this, that inevitably a fetus will be born, and therefore their direction or end result will be that they will be born, and therefore maybe that's more of a problem for the get, or a shiur in the get, versus the case of Eved and Oved Kochavim, and therefore you can't bring a proof from our Mishnah to answer this question. Chutz mibalach uta mahu. With the exception of the husband of her sister, what is the din? So the rule is that one may not marry two sisters b'chayehan in their lifetime. That means that as long as the sister is alive, even if one is divorced from that sister, he may not marry the other sister. On the other hand, if the sister that was his wife passed away before the divorce or even after a divorce, that individual can marry the other sister. So right now, balachuta means that I'm releasing you with the exception of your brother-in-law, meaning that the husband of your sister. Currently, the husband of her sister is not relevant to her because her sister is alive. And so therefore, it's under the class of people in the Mishnah where she can't marry them because they're kedushin and not tovsin. But over there, in the future, there is a possibility that her sister will pass away, and then this individual will be mutar to her. Hashta mi'alo chazio lay. Right now, there's no ability to have a relationship. Oh, Dilma, zimnin de meita achuta. Or maybe there is a possibility that her sister will pass away. V'chazilet. And then he will be mutar to her or relevant to her in the world of kiddushin. So again, this is a case where right now it's not a shiur, but in the future it could be a shiur if the individual passes away. Samalei tnitua. Again, they bring our Mishnah as a proof. Le'eved or the oved kochavim. Eved v'oved kochavim. Nami avidi demigayre. Again, eved oved kochavim have the possibility of converting. And since they have the possibility of converting, there we say it's not a problem. Or it's not considered to be a shiur. So again, before you suggested that that wasn't a good proof when we dealt with the issue of those that will be born in the future, because those that will be born in the future was an inevitable outcome, whereas Gerut was not an inevitable outcome. Over here, they're actually in the same category. The fact that her sister will pass away is not a given. It's not something that inevitably will happen. It's not clear that, first of all, her sister will predecease her husband. Number two is, it's not clear that she will not predecease her sister. So there's a possibility that her sister might pass away in her lifetime as well as her brother-in-law's lifetime. And then there is that would open up the possibility of marrying her brother-in-law. That's not inevitable. So now that would be a good proof from our Mishnah that Eved Oved Kochavim, even though they could convert, we don't consider that to be a shiur in the get. Mar says, not a good comparison again. Gerut lo shchicha, mita shchicha. When it comes to conversion, conversion's not a common occurrence. Death is a common occurrence. Now, that doesn't mean that we're choshesh lemita in general, to death in general. It's just in relationship. Relative to gerut, mita is more shchiach. It's more likely that someone will pass away than that they will convert. And therefore, you can't bring a proof from our Mishnah where you're talking about, call it a far-fetched or outside scenario where this individual will convert, versus the case of the brother-in-law where his sister passing away, again, is an inevitable thing that she will pass away. But that's not even what we're worried about here. The case here has to be that she predeceases both her husband, the brother-in-law, and her sister in order for that to happen. But that's still more common than the case of Gerut, and therefore you can't bring a proof from our Mishnah. Chutz miznutayich. With the exception of your znutayich, meaning that you are released, as long as you get married, not if you are engaged in promiscuous behavior. Binisuin haloshier. So maybe that's okay. It's not a shiur in the get because he left over nothing. He gave her the ability to marry anyone that she chooses. Oh, dilma shiur bibiya. Or maybe the fact that he doesn't allow her to engage freely with any man in any circumstance, maybe that is considered to be a shiur in the get. Again, it's our Mishnah. La'aba ulavich. The Mishnah says that if the get says you are mutar d'chol adam with the exception of the father and the father-in-law, then that's a good get. Now, ubemai, how would she engage with the father and the father-in-law? Ilema b'nisuin, every time about marriage, abba b'avich b'nei nisuninu, there is no such thing as marriage in that case because those are individuals who are precluded from marrying her and even halakhically can't have the marriage go through. Elalav biznut. It must be the case is the exclusion in the get is that you may not engage in improper behavior with them, meaning that having an affair with these individuals even though you can't marry them. And the Mishnah says only when he specifies father and father-in-law are those considered to be not an exception in the get or not a leftover residual connection to the woman. Halacher shier, implying that if it was anybody else where he precluded her from engaging in that manner with them, that that would be considered a residual in the get. From the Mishnah, it would seem that even with regards to znot, only individuals who she cannot marry or it's illicit for her to have a relationship in that manner is it not considered to be a shiur in the get. But for other parties, that would be considered a shiur in the get. Samar says, no, dilma b'nisuin. Maybe our Mishnah is talking about a case where she married her father and father-in-law, Davad Vinsiv. Meaning that, who says here that she's acting properly? The Mishnah is not necessarily talking about a case of someone who's doing the right thing. It could be someone who's doing the wrong thing. And so therefore, when it says over there, you are Mutar the Chol Adam, with the exception of the father and the father-in-law, That might mean don't marry them. Oh, you're not allowed to get married to them. Yes, you're right, you're not allowed to get married to them. But he's still saying that you may not marry them because she might marry them even though she's doing the wrong thing. So Gemara says, now, another question. Chutz mishlo kedarka mahu. In the case where it's biya shlo kedarka, what is the din there? Bikedarka lo shier. As far as normal relations, there was nothing left over. Or dilma mishkevei shaktiv. The terminology that is used by the Arayot says mishkevei isha in plural. And we learn from that b'shtei shchivot hakatuv midaber. The Torah is speaking about two shchivot, meaning engaging both kidarka and b'shelo kidarka. When it comes to bi'ah, as far as the Torah is concerned, they are considered to be synonymous. And so therefore, if you think, seemingly the Gemara is saying imtim salomar here, because the previous case was the difference between Nisuin versus Bi'ah. And now the Gemara is saying, well, seemingly, if Bi'ah is a problem to leave it out, what happens if you don't leave out normal relations, but Kshelo Kedarka? What is the status there? So Gemara leaves that as a question, whether that's considered to be a shir or not, because Bikedarka, he left. Kshelo Kedarka, maybe that's not a problem, or maybe it's covered by Mishkevei Isha, which equates the two types of Shchivot. Chutz me'afarat nidarayich mahu. With the exception of the ability to annul your nidarim, your vows. What's the din there? Binisuin haloshier. As far as their marital relationship, that's been totally severed. Odilma ishah yikimena ishah yifirenuktiv. The Torah empowers the husband to be able to annul the vows of his wife, and therefore retaining that privilege is leaving a residual connection between the parties. Now, how to explain this? Rashi over here says, chutz mi'afarat nidarayich, is that the original husband maintains the right to annul her vows. So retaining that right, is that considered to be a leftover in the relationship, meaning that the relationship now is not totally severed because he still has a right to annul her vows? Or do we say that the annulling of the vows is separate from the nisuin, the actual marriage? So as far as the marriage is concerned, that has been totally dissolved. All it is, he retained a right to annul the vows, but that is not a right that necessarily is equivalent to or the same as nisuin. Or do we say that ishah yikimenu ishah yifarenu, the right to annul vows is granted to the husband, and therefore maintaining that right makes it as if he is still her husband, and therefore it is considered to be a residual. That's the way Rashi learns it. On the other hand, others say chutz me'afarat nidarayich is that he says that you can get married with the exception of the annulment of vows, in that you have a right to get married to whomever you like, but whoever you marry afterwards, he may not annul your vows. So that's what he leaves over. And again, there's the same question that arises. Is that exception then preventing her from getting married? Of course, she can get married. She can have kiddushin nisuin. But the fact that that is a right of a husband, when he says that the new husband may not have that right, does that mean now he's prevented her from getting married fully? Because that husband will not get full rights of a husband. Or maybe, as far as nisuin is concerned, she's totally free. This is an outside privilege of the husband, and therefore leaving it out is not a problem. Chutz mitrumotayich, with the exception of truma, mahu. What is the din there? Bin nisuin haloshier. Again, as far as nisuin are concerned, nothing was left over. Odilma kinyan kaspoktiv. Or maybe by truma it says that the woman is kinyan kaspo, that there is now a relationship, a binding relationship, which allows her to eat truma. Here again, machloket, as to what this means. Rashi says, shim tinasi lekohen, lo yachilech b'truma. That if you get married to a kohen now, he may not give you truma to eat. So Rashi over here, as opposed to what he says by hafarat nidarayich, and by the next case, says this applies to the second husband. In every other case, Rashi says that the chutz here applies to the first husband. He's retaining the rights. Over here, he's saying that the next husband may not give her truma. So if she marries a kohen, then she can't get truma from that kohen. Is that considered to be a residual or not? Meaning that as far as nisuin is concerned, she's free to marry whomever she chooses. On the other hand, with regards to taking away the truma, truma is associated with kinyan kaspo. Truma is associated with a relationship of kiddushin. And therefore, by saying that the new husband cannot give her truma, maybe somehow that ruins her ability to get married fully, because he's retaining the right. Tosafot does not like Rashi's explanation over here, because the woman, by definition, is a grusha, and she can't marry a kohen. She marries a kohen now, she'll be a chalala, and won't be entitled to truma, because this is the whole point here, is we're talking about a divorce. And so therefore, getting to marry to a kohen will never entitle her to truma, so that can't be the explanation. Even though Tosafot comes up with one manifestation of that, which is that she has erusin without nisuin, meaning that she only has kiddushin, which makes her into kinyan kaspo midoraita, but doesn't necessarily bring her to nisuin, make her into a chlala, because she doesn't have biya then. So maybe in that instance you could find it. But Tosafot says that it seems to hear that it's talking about any case and a broad scenario, not just the one case of erusin. And therefore Tosafot explains trumotayich the same way that we explained Havarat Nedarayach before, which is that he says that you are free or released from me, but you're still entitled to eat truma, or you still can eat my truma. And that's how he does it. Rashi might not have explained it that way, because what right does he have to do that? Meaning that there's no way that the woman can eat truma from him if he divorces her. That severs the relationship. But that might be what the Gemara is asking. If he says that you are free, and you can do whatever you want, but you can still eat my truma, does that ability for her to eat the truma of her ex-husband now, or the first husband, does that therefore mean that he still has some sort of relationship there? Because the only way she can eat truma is if there is a relationship there. But Rashi might have thought that was so obvious that, of course, there's a relationship, otherwise she can't eat the truma. And that's why he explained differently than Tosafot. There is a third explanation of the Me'iri, which is that she's a bat kohen. She's the daughter of a kohen, and they have yet to have children. So this Yisrael that's married to this Bat Kohen, as long as she's married to the Yisrael, she's not entitled to eat Truma. If they divorce now, she can go back to her father's house and eat Truma. So when he says, Chutz mi Chomodayich, he's saying that you are released and free, but you may not go back to your father's house in order to eat Truma. So then again, is that considered to be a withholding of her freedom? Rashi and Tosafot might not have explained that way, because that has nothing to do with a third party, I mean a new husband's relationship. That has to do with their relationship to her Beit Avia, meaning the household of her father, and that residual doesn't show necessarily any relationship residual, because he's not maintaining anything here. He doesn't have any relationship. And as far as her father's concerned, if her father can feed her truma or not, that shouldn't be relevant to the case of Nisuin. That's just a question of whether she is entitled to go back or not entitled. And here he makes a condition that she's not entitled. Right? Chutz mi rushotayich, the exception of inheritance. Again, Rashi explains rushotayich means that he retains the right to inherit her. Says, you are divorced, but if you pass away, I will inherit you. The first husband says that. Others explain it refers to the second husband, which is, you can marry anybody you want, just that individual cannot inherit you. What's the din there? Minisuin aloshier, again, as far as marriage is concerned, there's nothing left over. Odilma lishe'erau ve'erashel taktiv. That when it comes to describing the relationship or the nature of inheriting one's wife, over there it calls her she'erau ve'erashel ta, meaning she'erau is that relationship of she'er. There is a wife-husband relationship that allows the husband to inherit his wife. And therefore, retaining those rights of inheritance are indicative of some sort of husband-wife relationship. Because there it says, the she'erau ha'karov elav. And that is what teaches us about the ability of the husband to inherit his wife. Chutz mi kedushayach b'shtar. The exception that you cannot get married, halachically engaged, with a shtar. Remember that there are three ways for a woman to get halachically engaged. There is kesef, shtar, and biyah. So she has three vehicles to get married. He says you can get married, you just can't use the vehicle of shtar. Mao, what's the din? Mi amrinan efshar demikadish la bekesef ubiya. Do we just say that she has other means by which she can get married, and therefore it's not considered to be a shiur, because she can use kesef biya? Odilma v'yatzav ha'ita, itku shavayot adodi. We have this principle that we'll see in the Gemara in Kiddushin, which is that all the havayot, all the halakhic engagements, are connected together and function on the same level. And therefore, if you're missing one of them, it somehow impedes her ability to get married and is considered to be a residual, because if you can't do one of them, then maybe you can't do the others, or maybe if you can't do one of them, that is considered to be a problem of yatzah v'hayta, that she's now been released and then can go ahead and get married. The inability to get married through a shtar might be a problem for the yitziah, that connection between, again, the divorce and the marriage. Teiku. In all these cases, these are unresolved issues. And as the Tosafot Reed points out over here, choteiku du isura l'chumra. Anytime we have a teiku when it comes to isur, we go to chumra. And so in all these instances, we be choshesh that there is a problem in the get. These would be considered to be a shiur in the get. Misafek. And therefore we would say that she needs to get another get, or that we would possibly force them to get divorced if she got married based on these gitin. Right, next Mishnah. Gufo shel get, the ikar part of the get is, hare at muteret l'chol adam, that you are released to all individuals. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Now, when Rabbi Yehuda Omer, it's not clear here whether Rabbi Yehuda is adding on to hare at muteret l'chol adam, and then he says you have to add this language on, or if he's coming along and saying that this replaces the language that the Chachamim say, instead of writing Ariat Mutar L'Chol Adam, you should write this instead. That's number one. Number two is, the Mishnah is missing the key elements of the get. Key elements of the get are the name of the man, the name of the woman, the city of the man and the city of the woman. The Mishnah here says, Gufo shel get. This is the core essence of the get, Ariat Mutar L'Chol Adam. So there are differences of opinions amongst the Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that that's obvious. That's part of the get. Of course you have to write the names of the individuals and their cities, otherwise who's the get belong to? The Mishnah doesn't mention them because it's self-evident that those have to be in the get. And Ariad Muteret L'Chol Adam is telling you what other language you need in there besides that information. On the other hand, the Tosafot read over here says something amazing. He says, Perish, afal pi shelo katab beget, even though he doesn't write the get, ana ploni mi'ir ploni, patarit yataychi plonit mi'ir plonit, he leaves out the information about the man and the woman. Ella, hariat muteret l'chol adam, bilachud. That's the only thing that's written in there. The names of the individuals are not in there. Havi get kasher. That is a full-fledged get. Sheinu kotev kozeh elishe raya biyada. The only reason he writes his name, her name, and all that information in there is hayom ha-machar shebala girsha. That the document will be a document of evidence that they got divorced. Avalim eidim eidim. If we have Edim, Edim Mesira according to Rabbi Elazar, Edim Ktiv according to Rabbi Meir, Shukatav Zeget, Vinetanola, that if he wrote this get and gave it to her, Avopi Shem Sham, Shmo Vishma, Shemiro Vishemira, even if all that information is missing, not him, his city, not her and her city, Kasherhu, that is a totally good get. Velo Mifsal, and the only time it's Mifsal is if you write the wrong name of the individuals. So if you leave it out entirely, what he's saying is that the get is kasher. As long as they know who the husband is, who's giving it to the wife, and they didn't can testify, that's a good get if you leave out their names completely. On the other hand, if you write the wrong name in there or the wrong city in there, the get is pasul, as he says over here, because that's mizuyaf mitocho. Now you've ruined the get. I mean that if you can sometimes do something and ruin it versus not doing it at all. Over here, if you don't write the names at all, the Tosafot Reed says kosher get. If you write the wrong names, then that ruins the get entirely. And therefore, the Tosafot Reed takes a position here. When the Mishnah says, Gufu shel get, it means literally, this is all you need in a get. Hariat muteret l'chol adam, and you have a full-fledged get without any of the other trappings that you would normally associate with the get, which is the names of the individuals or the parties that are getting divorced over here. Other Rishonim disagree with the Tosafot Reed and believe that you need the names, and the Mishnah just took that as a given, that you would write the names in there. What else do you need? That's what the Mishnah is saying. The other thing that the Tosafot Reed notes over here later on, he says is that you don't have to literally write Hariat Muteret L'Chol Adam. Hariat Muteret L'Chol Adam is a nice language, and it works. But he says, if the get has the equivalent language in it that simulates whatever Hariat Muteret L'Chol Adam is, that's enough. You don't have to have Hariat Muteret L'Chol Adam inside of the get, and it's still a kosher get. Again, other Rishonim will say that that is absolute. Hariat Muteret L'Chol Adam is a necessary part of the get. That's what the Mishnah says, Gufo shall get. If you don't have that language in it, it doesn't work.
Most important part of the get.
Correct. It is the most important part of the get, but the Tosafot Reed says you can simulate that by saying something like this. Imkatal of ani ploni gerashti plonit intiti. That I so-and-so divorced so-and-so my wife. And that's the equivalent of saying hariat muteret l'chol adam. Meaning that you don't need that exact language as long as the language of the get says that this is a document of divorce and I'm divorcing my wife. That is enough information to replace Hariat Mutar L'chol Adam. So again, here, the Tosfot Reed doesn't see the Mishnah here before, whereas before he saw the Mishnah being exact and not requiring the names of the individuals to be in there, simply Hariat Mutar L'chol Adam. Still, even the words Hariat Mutar L'chol Adam, according to Tosfot Reed, are not exact. Just means that's the gist of the get. As long as you get that gist, it's enough. You don't have to write those exact words. Again, those that disagree with him and say, you need the exact words because that is gufo shel get. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and again here, I mentioned before that Rabbi Yehuda, it's a question of whether he's adding on to the words of the Chachamim, or saying this is the equivalent of Hariat Mutar L'chol Adam in a longhand, meaning that this is a more wordy way to say the same thing, which is V'dein Davi Lechi Minai, this will be from me to you, Sefer Tiruchin, a bill of divorce, the Igeret Shivukim, a letter of releasing, leaving you, V'get Piturin, and a get that causes us to sever the relationship. L'mahach, l'hit nasba, l'chol gavar, ditzvi'in. That will allow you now to marry any man that you so desire. Gufo shel get, shichlur. The main elements of a document of emancipation for a slave is, hari'at bat chorin, hari'at le'atzmeich. That you are now free. Or you are now for yourself, meaning that you have ownership over yourself and nobody else has ownership over you. Where it says, pshita, it's clear that if this was the language, amar la l'ishto, if he says to his wife, hariat bat chorin, lo amar v'lo klum, that you are a free woman, that has no meaning over here because freedom is not the relationship between a husband and wife. She wasn't enslaved until this point. Whereas saying bat chorin makes her into a divorcee because the relationship like that didn't exist before. Amar la l'shivchato, and similarly, if he speaks to his maidservant and says, hariat mutar l'chol adam, you are now free to marry anybody you choose, lo amar v'lo klum. That has no bearing or no meaning as well. Even though it's true, when he frees her, now she can marry anyone she wants, that's not the relationship that exists. It wasn't before that he precluded her from marrying anyone else. It was the nature of the relationship of owner and slave. And therefore, if you say mutar l'chol adam, using the wrong language to release the slave. So that's what the Gemara says here, is that part is pshita. That part is straightforward, that if he uses that language by the woman, it doesn't work. He uses the language of the slave by the woman, it doesn't work. And if he uses the language of the woman by the slave, it doesn't work. But, amar la l'isha, hari at li'atzmeich mahu. Then if he says to his wife, you're on your own reconnaissance now, it does that work. L'gamrei kamarla, ola malocha kamarla. We don't know how to define the terminology that he used. When he says that you're on your own now, does on your own mean you're completely released from any auspices that I have over you or any isurim that are generated by a relationship? Or that language could also mean you're on your own now means you do your masa yadayim and you feed yourself because of that relationship that the husband provides mizonot and the woman provides the masa yadayim. So when he says, hariat l'atzmeich means you're on your own now, you're independent. You gotta feed yourself now, I'm not gonna feed you anymore. So that might be the meaning of the statement. Obviously that does not mean divorce in that case. That is talking about another part of their relationship. So Amarle Ravina the Ravashi, Tashma. What about a proof from our Mishnah, the Tanan? Gufo shel get shichur, the key element of a document of emancipation is hariat bat chorin, hariat l'atzmeich. You are a free woman, you are on your own now. Uma abdo de kani le gufe. In a case by a slave, where the ownership of the master is so much so that he owns the actual individual, meaning like property rights in the individual. So there, when he uses the terms, that is sufficient to allow the maidservant to go free, meaning that where the ownership is even stronger, the relationship is stronger, hariat l'atzmeich is sufficient grounds to release the maidservant. Isha delokane gufa, in the case of relationship between a husband and a wife, where he doesn't own her like property, but rather there is a husband-wife relationship, lokoshke, certainly then hariat l'atzmeich should be sufficient in order to release her. That he leaves that as being the answer, supposed answer for the question. So Amarle Ravina the Ravashi. So now Ravina says to Rashi, Amarle Labdo. He uses this language by his slave. Ainli Esek Becha Mahu. I have nothing to do with you anymore. What is that? Is that sufficient release of the Eved to make him into a free person? So we have other Amoraim speaking to Ravashi and saying, Tashma, Tanya, we had a Breita earlier in the Masechta, a Mukher Abdo, Loved Kochavim, someone who sells his slave to a non-Jew, Yatzal Cherut. He goes free automatically, Mitzarech Get Shichur Mi Rabo Rishon. And he needs a document of emancipation from his first master. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Bamed Varim Amurim. When is that true? Bishlo Katav Alav Ono. If he didn't write an Ono on him originally, then he needs a document of emancipation. But Katav Alav Ono, Zehu Shichuro. If he writes this Ono, then that will double as his document of emancipation. My Ono. What is the Ono? Amar Rav Sheshet Dichtiv Lei. That he writes to the slave when he sells him to the Oved Kochavim, Lishik Tiv Rach Mimenu, when you run away from him, Einli Esek Pacha, I have nothing to do with you. So you see from that, that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that is sufficient language to free the slave. If he says that when you run away from Oved Kochavim, I have no relationship with you, that frees him. That's in place of a Get Shechror. So you see, Einli Esek Pacha does have sufficient strength to release the relationship between the master and the slave. And if he uses that language, and he says, I have nothing to do with you, that means, literally, I have nothing to do with you, and you are now a free individual or a free man. What is the machloket between the Chachamim, the Tanakama, and Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbanan Sabre, Rabbanan believe Yadayim Shein Mochichot Avin Yadayim. That when you have something which is not explicit, but seems to be from the context, the meaning of what is happening, that is considered to be a yadayim. So what you see over here is, v'af agav delo katav lo, even if you don't write v'dein, that this document is the document of divorce, or the bill of divorce, mukha milta d'bahagita kamegarish lo. It's obvious that he's using this document to divorce her. Even without the word dain, dain means this. This means this document will act as the document of divorce. So what the Chachamim say is, even if you don't write the word dain in the document, it's obvious that it's using this document to divorce his wife. He's handing her the document in order to divorce her. So even though it's not mukhacha milta, it is not absolute that that is the case, because as Rabbi Yehuda is going to point out, you could think that he is verbally, orally divorcing her, and the document he's handing her is just evidence of that oral divorce, or that verbal divorce. So that might be the explanation of this, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda requires you to write the word dain. Rabbi Yehuda savar, yadayim shei mochichot lo aben yadayim. When it's not absolutely certain that that's the case, that's not considered to be the meaning of what's written there. V'tayma dichtav la v'dain. That only if you write the word dain, the mukha milta, the agita kamigarishla, where it's obvious that through that he is divorcing her. Aval, lo katavla v'dain. If he doesn't write v'dain, amrei. What people will say is b'dibura garsho, that he is divorcing her through the words that he says to her when he hands her the get. Hey gitech, hariat muter de choladam. V'shtar arayov almu. And the shtar is simply a document of evidence that the divorce took place. So over here, it's not absolutely certain from the language of the get that the get is the vehicle for the divorce. If you say v'dain, this document, then it's clear that this document is functioning as the bill of divorce, and that is what generates the divorce. Rabbi says you need that in order for it to be a document of divorce, because if you have yadayim she'in mochichot, you have something that contextually seems to be that it's the get, but it's not absolutely certain. So, in that case, I say to you that that's not good get, because yadayim she'en mochichot are halo havin yadayim. That's not considered to be something that is sufficient to make it clear that this get is a get. Another chachamim say, yadayim she'en mochichot, even though it's not absolutely certain and obvious, from all the circumstantial evidence and the context, it's clear that he's trying to divorce her with this get, and even though it doesn't say explicitly, v'dayin, this document is the divorce, it's sufficient that he writes in there all this information, Ariat Muter de Chol Adam, all that that he's saying in there makes it almost contextually and circumstantially obvious that this is what he's trying to do with the get. So that's the machlok between them as to whether you need the Lashon of Dain or not in the get. Ambar Abayis, and Amaya is now going to give us information. Hayman Dichtiv Gita. Someone who writes a get, Lo lichtov v'dein. He should not write v'dein with a yud in it. Demashma v'din. Because that could be read, instead of v'dein, it could be read v'din. Which means that I have an altercation, I have an adjudication with you, rather than v'dein, that this will be a get piturin. Ela v'dein, you should write it chaser, without the yud in there, so you don't make the mistake of reading it as v'din instead of v'dein. Now, here, Abaye is making this suggestion seemingly to the Sofrim, who write the Gitin, that you should write it in this way. If it's not done, from the Gemara, it seems to me that these are suggestions, that in order that there be no mix-up, that you should write it in this way. Whether these psulim are psulim to the point where b'diavad it won't be a get, that is not clear from the Gemara over here. There are some Rishonim who believe that if you don't do this, that it's problematic. Although many follow the psak of the Gonim, who say over here that you don't need that. This is only true or problematic when it's written by the sofer and not the husband. Even if it's written by the sofer, it's only a problem if there is a fundamental mistake in the get, not these, what we call them, shipur alashon. Things that are enhancements to the language or make it clear, those are nice things to have, but they're not going to ruin the get. These are just suggestions. So then he says, v'lo lichtov igeret. Shouldn't write igeret malay with a yud in it. Demashma, the way Rashi reads it, it is that it's mashma igrat or igra. It can mean the roof. So therefore, don't write it with a yud in there, because that can mean roof instead of a letter. Ela igeret chaser, which is obvious that it is an igeret and not an igeret with a yud, or an igra, a roof. So that's why you would write it chaser instead of malay. Tosafot over here brings another problem, which is that whether the focus was not on the yud in the igeret, but rather on the vav before. It says here, v'chein u'beseder tikun shterot, shekatav Rav Yosef Tov Ilaim, katav lo lichtov igeret below vav. Don't write the igeret without the vav achibur associated with it. D'mashma igrota ba'alma shadam shaleach lechaveiro. Because otherwise it sounds like a generic letter that is sent between parties. Ela v'igeret b'vav, d'mashma d'koya gita, that it's going on the get, v'udan d'le'el, and that which is written beforehand. Meaning that in here it says, dein hevi laichi minai sefer teruchin. Now if it just writes igeret sounds like it's just a letter of friendship or some sort of exchange between them. V'igeret, then the Vav Chibur takes it back and says that that's part of the Sefer Teruchin v'Igeret. So that'll go back on the Dain, and also go back on the Sefer Teruchin. It contextually makes it into a Igeret, this particular letter, rather than the generic letter. The other thing is that it also might be the difference between the Aramaic and the Hebrew, which is that, as Tosafot points out over here, that when it comes to Hebrew, the word igeret in the Torah is always written chaser. So therefore, if you're writing the Hebrew word igeret, then you would write it without a yud, because that's the way that it's written in the Torah. Once you already add in a yud, even though it's easier, it helps you understand what the pronunciation is, nevertheless, that already makes it into the Aramaic word igeret or igra, roof. And that's the difference over here, as to whether you have the yud in there or not, is whether it's Hebrew or Aramaic. V'lo lichtov limhach. You should not write limhach demashma li mehach. The way that Rashi says it over here is, don't write limhach. If you put the yud in there, it would look like it's two words. That li mehach, this is from me, from this, again, which would be meaningless in this context, rather than the true meaning of the word there, which is limhach leinsaba, that will allow you or grant you the right to do something. So the limhach over here would, if you put a yud in there, allow you to separate the words into two words and say limhach. So leave out the yud, so it reads as a single word of limhach, that grants you the right. V'lo lichtov limhach. You should not write limhach with a chet, demashma kichucha, because that is like a joke or laughter. Meaning that be careful that it's a hey and not a chet. There are others, like the Rambam, who seem to think that that was one problem. Rashi divides the problems up and says, don't write it malay, and don't write it the chet instead of the hey. The way that the Rambam had it was limchach, was one word, which would mean a joke, instead of limhach, which would have been the word that you wanted there. Now, it says in the get, the dehevian, de titzvian. You shall be, and the one that you choose. Tlata, tlata yudin. As you see it spelled here in the Gemara, you put in three yuds at the end. The mashma, because the meaning of that is, tehevian, v'titzvian, that you will be, or what you want. Because if you did not write the extra yud in there, you could have read it as tehavyan v'titzvayan as a more generic statement. Well, you want to make it personal to the individual, tevyin, that is yours, titzvayin, that you want. I mean, that is specifically speaking to the woman's ability to do what she wants, that this will be for you, and that you will have the ability to choose. And not a generic statement about women in general, that they have tevyan and titzvayan. So therefore we write three yudin in there. Tosafot brings from the Ri that he saw in Rav Yosef Tov Vilaim that you have to have five yuds in the word, and that's the way it's spelt actually over here. In our Gemara, there are two yuds, one after the dalet, one after the tof, and then the three yuds at the end. And therefore you should put in there five yuds. And again, he says over here that you have to be careful that the v'di tehevyin him shtei tevot. Those are two words. The word di here before ditzvyin and ditehevyin are actually two words, because the word di there means a share that will be, a share hevyan that will be for you, or a share titzvyin, that which you choose. Therefore, the word di is separated away from the word. It's actually two words, and the word di is a share. On the other hand, when it says diyatva, in the get it says that you live, and it gives the location of the individual, diyatva, that she lives or she sits. Sits means there that she dwells. Then that is one word. And you should not say ditva, which means asher yoshevet. That's not what you want the word to mean. And therefore you should make it into one word there, that diyatva rather than diyatva. So he describes the difference here between using it, the D, when you want it to be two words, and that's where they put in, over here, the D should be separated from the words. Whereas earlier in the get, when you say diatva, where it lives, over there you should not separate between the words, because there you don't want to say, asher yoshevet, but rather yoshevet, that does live. Alright, v'lorche levav de teruchin, v'lovav de shivukin. You should lengthen out the vav of teruchin, and the vav of shivukim, demashmet trichin u'shvikin. If you don't do that, then instead of it being teruchin, it'd be trichin u'shvikin. And again, that would be a more generic statement about that generally divorcees are trichin u'shvikin. They are divorced and released or freed or left alone, but not speaking to this woman in particular. You want this to be a get teruchin and a geret shivukin, which is this in particular, not generically, that's the way that divorcees are. The velorche the vav dichedu, and you should lengthen the vav ichdu, which is not mentioned here in our Gemara, but we'll see in a second in Rashi that the tofis aget is mentioned over there. The mashma uchedi, because if you don't lengthen the vav, it's going to sound like the word uchedi, which means chinam, kadi, means for free. And so the word free is the incorrect word over here, because dichdu means with this. Velo lichtov leit nasba. You should not say or write the word lit nasba, that you, when it says over here, lit nasba, the whole gvardi yitzyavin, it shouldn't be lit nasba. The mashma, la yit nasba. Because that would mean, or you could read it as being, you should not marry. Okay, we have something similar like that when it comes to the Yamim Noraim. The Mishnah Brewer brings down that one should not say, when you say zachreinu, you should make sure to say zachreinu lichayim, and not zachreinu lachayim. Because if you say zachreinu lachayim, it could also be interpreted as la lo chayim, like the Aramaic. So the same thing over here. You shouldn't say li itnasba, because then it could be read like la itnasba. It could be read as do not get married. So rather we should say ela hitnasba. We use that to hey that you may get married. You should do write it in that way, because then there's no confusion. Then it's clear that means that to get married rather than not to get married. Alright, so now if you look in Rashi under the mashma lamahach, Rashi writes over here, Zeu Tofei Saget. What we've been reading till now is the Torei Faget, which is what's mentioned here in the Mishnah, is the main language of the get, or the focal point of the get. Now, Rashi says the Tofei Saget, which is the boilerplate language of the get that is added in, Rashi says, Zehu Tobeza get. Patrit yatichi leichi. I release you, Aunt Plonit Bat Ploni. You, so-and-so, the daughter of so-and-so. David intetimi kadamat zina. You were my wife until this point. Uchadu. And with this, patrit, v'shavkit, v'tarichit, yataychi. And with this, I release you, divorce you, and abandon you. Didahavyan rasha v'shalta'a b'nafshaychi. That you will have full control and auspices over yourself. Tamach, v'mehind asba d'choman d'yitz yatzvin. That you can now marry anybody you so choose. Vinish loy mechabi yadaychi min yomad zanan, and no man should stop you from this point forward. Uli alam, going forward. Bedein, dehei havi laychi minai, and then this will be from me to you. Get piturin, v'sefer teruchin, v'geret shivukim, kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. So Rashi says that is the boilerplate language of the get. Again, some of which is taken from Rabbi Yehuda's statement in the Mishnah. Again, that would make the Torah forget. They hariat mutar the chol adam. And according to other Rishonim besides the Tosfot Ri, it would also include the name of the man, the name of the woman, and their cities. That would be the Torah forget. And then the remainder of this language would be what he calls the tofei saget. And that's why I mentioned before, uchadu, when the Gemara said uchadu, which is not mentioned in our Mishnah, that comes out of the tofei saget. And that's what you saw there in Rashi mentioning it. You should write it with a vav and not with a yud. Now, in all of these cases, the Gemara says here, you have to write it with a long vav. Tosafot clarifies and says he doesn't think you have to write it with a long vav, meaning longer than normal. You have to make sure that the vavs are long enough that they don't look like yuds. The point of making it long is that it's not a yud, but rather a vav. He says, despite that fact, the minog amongst the sofrim was to make the vavs a little longer. And the hay of limhach, to distance the regel, the leg of the hay, away from the roof of the hay, a little more than normal, to make sure it's clear that it's a hay and not a chet. So the minhag of the sofrim was to do that, even though he thinks it's not necessary. The only thing we need to do is make sure that your vavs look like vavs and don't look like yuds. And he says over here, he tells a story that there was a case in which a get came before Rabbeinu Eliyahu, and he couldn't tell the difference. It was hard to tell the difference between the yuds and the vavs in this get. So he called over a young kid from next door, the lo chakim lo tipesh, and asked him to read it to say whether it was a yud or a vav, invoking the halacha that is in the Gemara Menachot with regards to a Sefer Torah. When you don't know if it's a vav or not, over there you bring over a young child to determine whether they read it as a vav or they read it as a yud to determine. So same thing, he did the same thing with a get to see whether he read it as a yud or read it as a vav. Bedein yibayluhu. So in the end, the Gemara says, Bein and Vedain, although Bein and Vedain. Do we need the word Vedain in the end or not? Meaning, do we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda that it has to be Vedain, meaning it has to be a Yad Mochiach? Or are we not paskin like Rabbi Yehuda and it does not have to be a Yad Mochiach? Tashma. Let's see even this. The Itkin Rava Begite. Rava instituted in Gitin that they use the following language. Eich Planya Bar Planya Ata Ploni Bar Ploni. You, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, patar v'tarich, releases and is migaresh, yat, plonita, intete, so-and-so his wife, David intete min kadamdna, who was his wife until this point, miyomadnan ule'olam, from today going forward. Vilu v'dein lo kamar. And in the get of Ravo, or the language that Rabbi used, the word dein is not mentioned in there. Wait a minute, according to your reasoning, Rabbi here is only giving you some additional language. He's not giving you the core language of the get. We just saw in Rashi the tofes get. We see in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, about what has to be in the get. All that's missing from Rabbi's get. So it's clear here that he's not giving you a comprehensive view of what the get is, but rather simply the additional language that Rabbi would like put into the get, in addition to the other languages that we have. So you can't prove anything from Rabba's language. So that's what it says. Mikamar ela binan hachanami binan. Just like in the other case, you have to fill in all these other languages that are not mentioned by Rabba's language. So to over here, maybe Vedain is needed. And nevertheless, it's not written here because Rabba's not giving you a comprehensive view of the get. He's just adding in a language that he would like to see in the get, in addition to the standard languages that are in the get, like Hariat Mutar the Chol Adam. as well as the Tofis get that Rashi had all that language around it. Now, the Gemara now discusses that language of Rava. Meyomadnan, from today. Lafuke mid Rabbi Yossi, that comes to exclude the position of Rabbi Yossi. Damar zmano shel shtar mochiach alav. Because Rabbi Yossi is of the belief that the dating of the shtar tells you from which day it comes true. In other words, for Rabbi Yossi, if you date the shtar, it's equivalent of writing me'achshav in the shtar. And since you've dated the shtar, you don't need to write me'umadznan from today forward, from today henceforth. Because that's obvious by the fact that you dated the shtar. As Rashi points out over here, Ba'afagav de kaimelon ka Rabbi Yossi, and Tosfot pointed this out earlier in the Masechta, even though we paskin like Rabbi Yossi, that the zmano shel shtar mochiach alav, bina nafuki nafshim miplukta. Rashi says that Rava still instituted this language to take us away from any machloket, meaning that here by writing in Meyom Adnan, we are yotzei all the shitot, number one. And number two is, it's just clear then. It's a much clearer and succinct language if it makes it obvious that it's from today, rather than relying on the fact that, yes, the date does that. Either because we'll come across beti dinim that don't really know the halacha, there will be lay people who are reading it that don't understand that. In order to, and for the purpose of clarity, as well as the fact that we're dealing with gitin, which are documents that are important for the woman to be freed, we don't want any aspersions cast on the get. And therefore, we write it in a more comprehensive and almost wordy way in order to ensure that we cover every opinion and all different possibilities so that no mistake or no issue should come up. Uli alam, forever. Lafuke bidumai mine, Rava mi Rav Nachman. That comes to exclude the case that Rava posed the question to Rav Nachman damar. Hayom ime at ishti. If he says, today you are not my wife, what is meant by that? Is that a form of divorce? Or do we imply from that, hayom at ishti, ulmachar at ishti? Or do we see from that language a meaning that today you're not my wife, but tomorrow you are my wife? By putting on the olam, you eliminate any of that possibility by saying that this divorce is permanent and not that just from today you're not my wife, implying that tomorrow you are my wife, but rather, le'olam, forever you are not my wife, and therefore you don't have that problem or that diuk lishoni. Right? Gufo shel get shichur, ariat bat chorim, ariat latzmech. The core elements of a document of emancipation are either you are a free woman or you are to yourself. Itkin Rav Yehuda b'shtar zvine d'avde. Rav Yehuda established in the document of sale for a slave. Avda d'nan, this slave, mutzdak l'avdo, is rightfully enslaved, meaning that there aren't any questions about the fact that he is a slave. Upatir vatir min chure. And he is separated and distant from any freedom. Umin alululei, umin irurei, malka umalkata. From any, now Tosfot flips the language over here, because it says, lashon of irur is a question of lay people, and alulei are excuses of the government. But what the language means is that this individual is free of any claims by other parties, those are irurim, and alulei malko malkavato means that he is not subject to criminal activity with the government, where he is subject to prosecution, and the way Rashi writes it, execution, meaning that he's chayav mita, that he is muhtav de malchut, he's done something where the government wants to put him to death. So he's free of any of those burdens. Virashum de inish, lo it alohi. And Rashi says that there is no stamp of any other individual on him, meaning that no one else is claiming him as a slave, the stamp of a slave on him. Tosafot, on the other hand, says that maybe Rashum over here means that nobody else has an outstanding debt that is collectible through him or has a claim to him because of an outstanding debt. Umenuka mikol mum, and he is free of any blemish. Umin shchin, and from any diseases, but here we're specifically speaking about diseases that are unpleasant to look at, disgusting, and would make it almost impossible for this slave to work for whoever is buying him because they would be so ma'us, so disgusted by whatever disease that he has. The nafik ad titzar chat vatik. that appears in the next 2 years, old or new. So now, what he's promising here basically is that this slave has not had shchin in the recent past or in the distant past, because if it appears or the shchin reappears in the next 2 years, it means it was still latent in the Eved, and it was already present at the time of the sale. And so basically he warranties that the slave will not have this in the next 2 years, saying that there's nothing latent today in the slave that would indicate that if it comes out in the next 2 years, would be problematic. And if it does come out in the next 2 years, it is a mekach ta'ut. As Rashi notes over here, tzitzar is a Persian word that means 2 years. Now Rashi and Tosafot over here address the issue that we saw in the Gemara in Ketubot, which says that we said, simpon avadim leka. There is no such thing as a mekach ta'ut by avadim. If you buy an eved, and then you find a mum in the eved, there's no such thing as simpon. There, the Gemara is contrasting that with a woman, getting married to a woman, if you find the mum, that there is a possibility of simpon. By avadim, the Gemara there says, ein simpon b'avadim. There is no such thing as simpon b'avadim. Because, number one, any mum that is visible, you saw, and you accepted. Any mum that is not visible, that doesn't matter because you don't have to see it, it doesn't affect you. And therefore, there is no such thing as simpon b'avadim. So then, why over here do we have the issue of shchin? Why is that considered to be simpon b'avadim? So Rashi answers that problem by simply saying that the default is that there is no simpon b'avadim. The default is that you have no warranties or whatever you buy, you get with an eved. On the other hand, if you specify that you're warranting something or guaranteeing something, then you hold accountable for it, and there is simpon. And over here, where they're specifying that there is no shchin, and it won't appear in the next 2 years, if it does appear, there is simpon b'avadim, because you warranted the matter. And since you warranted the matter, you're held accountable for that. Tosfot, on the other hand, says that when we say there is no simpon b'avadim, that is for mumim sheina lavata. Those are for blemishes that are apparent and extant currently. Aval, botan sheyavo alav acharkach, those that will come up after the fact, I mean the shchin, which will appear later on, lo yezra'u lemekem kameh, and that will prevent him from being able to service his master, because he'll be, whether he's in pain or it's so disgusting that he can't appear in front of his master, but daihavi mekach ta'ut, that is a mekach ta'ut. So Tosafot differentiates between simpon, which is blemishes currently, versus something that is latent and only appear in the future, where it is a mekach ta'ut. Rashi differentiates between the default status of the sale versus a warranty that is explicit, where you will be held accountable for such a warranty. Tosafot also notes, the Gemara there asks about the fact that if there's no simpon b'avadim, what happens if you find out after the fact that he's an armed robber, or that he was muhtav malchut, he was on death row with the government officials, and then they find out that after the fact, why isn't that considered to be simpon b'avadim? There the Gemara says, kala idluhu. So Rashi claims kala idluhu means that everybody knows about that. That information is well known and well circulated, and therefore if you buy him, you accepted it. Tosafot over there, and he notes it over here as well, disagrees with Rashi, and brings the sheet of the Rabbeinu Tam, who says, kala idlu means that these are unusual circumstances, that it's not common. It's either well known or very uncommon. And therefore, we don't worry about it, because even though technically, if he is muhtav l'malchut, it is a mekach ta'ut, we call that still as that there is no simpon b'avadim, because it's such an unusual case. This is such an unusual case where someone will buy an eved, not know that he's muktav the machut and find out about it. We don't call that simpon b'avadim, but rather it's a very unique and unusual case. And eino chanami, if it does happen, then there is a mekach ta'ut, as we see from the Gemara over here. And that's one of the proofs of the Balei Tosafot that you see over here, that muktav the machut would have been a mekach ta'ut. And that's why it's specified in the contract of buying a slave that this individual is clearly not wanted by the government authorities. Mar says, Umaya Sute, what is the cure for this shchin that the individual has? And Rabaye, Ginbira, which Rashi says is zinzabar or ginger. Umartika, which Rashi says is psolet sige kesef, the dross from the smelting of silver. Vikavrita, like a sulfur. Vichala de chamra, and vinegar from wine. Umishcha de zeta and olive oil. Vnaftik chivara, which seems like is nafta, white nafta. Vshaitele begatva de avza. And you apply it with the feather of a goose. And that mixture is the medicinal cure for shchin. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Pei Vav Amud Aleph.